You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
They're saying I should think stuff. Something is wrong with me.
Practice.
It's another edition of Positive Cynicism, and we're going to keep this open real short and sweet because I don't have anything to say. So I'm just going to put the plugs out here for the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network, jitterymonkey.com. You can check out all the shows, Nerd United, Five Heart, My 1-2-3 Cents, and of course, the one you're listening to now, Positive Cynicism. Be sure to head over to the jitterymonkey.com website, hit the shop button, buy some merchandise. Support local podcasters. That's all I have to say. Like I said, short and sweet, commercial break, then on the flip side, back with this month's Wonder Why.
Hi, this is Greg Mahochko, the host of Nerds United on the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. And over the years that I've been running the Nerds United show, I've been fortunate enough to speak with many of my talented friends, both artists and writers, creators of comic books. But I've also spoken with some more recognizable names in comics and entertainment. Legendary artist Greg Land, hey, we Greg's gotta stick together. Writer Colin Bunn, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, and comic book creator DMC Daryl McDaniels, The Flash of yesteryear, and in more recent memory, Flash's dad, John Wesley Shipp, and a lot more. And I encourage you to subscribe to the Nerds United podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, or you can check it out anytime you want on jitterymonkey.com. And as founder of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network, I really do appreciate your support. When you share a podcast, you help get our little corner of the podcasting world out to even more people. So anytime you do that, you really don't know how much we appreciate it. So share away.
I remember that song.
I want to take me to Funky Town. Want to take me to Funky Town.
Did that band record any other song? Wonder what else is on that album. Wonder what other songs of theirs are good. Wonder why only one hit.
Yes, we're traveling back to 1999. We're stealing sunshine. That rhymed. I'm not even going to attempt to keep on rapping. I'm just going to introduce the Wonder Why co-host, the musical expert here at Positive Cynicism, the hockey transplant, Mike DeKalb. And if you're a first-time listener, introducing him as both the music expert and the hockey transplant, probably a little confusing.
Expertise in a lot of areas, right?
There you go. And you should just check out Mike's website, hockeytransplant.com,
please,
to find out more about why he is the hockey transplant. And listen to the show to find out why he is the music expert.
Oh, yes. I'm a Renaissance man.
Yes. But Mike, we are, as I said, we're traveling back to 1999. But before we get into the subject of this month's show, I just want to take a little time, a little throwback, not quite to 20 years, to more just 1 year. This is the 1 year anniversary episode of the most controversial episode of Wonder Why.
Mungo Jerry.
In the summertime, when the weather is high, you can stretch right up and touch the sky. When the weather's fine, you got women on your mind. Have a drink, have a drive, go out and see what you can find. And as we get into this episode, I think July is going to become the month.
It's our graveyard. That's the one where we just dump all the band. Well, the problem is we pick these songs before we've heard the rest of the artist. Yeah. And we legitimately, when you came to me with the idea for this podcast, I said, oh, this is going to be fun. We're going to get to dig into these artists and hear some more of their material. It just so happens that what I think are going to end up being our two worst artists that were just a chore to listen to happened to both just be in this month of July, right?
Yeah, I tried it. When I picked the song, I tried to, like, at least look at the Wikipedia page or listen. I actually pre-listened to the album or scan it just to try to be like, okay, is this going to be, a good episode? Is there something there? And sure. I think because of this episode focusing on 1999, as we've done all month here on the other shows across the Positive Cynicism board, I think I came down to this song, and I want to say Deep Blue Something, but that may not have actually been 99. Right.
Well, since I haven't been, if there's anybody else who is not up to date with what you're doing this month, could you explain the theme of the night? I mean, obviously, 20th anniversary. Well, you could have done the 25th anniversary of 1994 or something. Yeah. But tell me about 1999 and how we're going to get around to Len.
Well, I started in 1999. I don't even remember. I think I read something else or saw something that was like the 20th anniversary of 1999. And I just had this idea that why don't we do a theme month? And then this book came out called, I believe it's called Best Cinema Year Ever, 1999. I'm like, oh, okay, this would be a good year to talk. So the first episode of the month, which is always kind of focuses on society, or mostly focuses on society, we decided to take a look back at where we were in 1999 as a generation getting ready to head into a new millennia or a willennium.
Well, yeah, Y2K and all that stuff.
Right? Yeah. So, and that one I thought was a very interesting discussion about how cynical the 90s were, and also how violent the 90s were, and how it. Okay. If you haven't listened, spoiler, two sentence wrap up. It's prior to 1990, all of our enemies, if you will, were external forces, whereas the decade of the 90s was more the internal Timothy McVeigh in Oklahoma, Columbine, some others. So, yeah, it was a kind of a depressing conversation, but it was an interesting one to see where we came out. And then the cinema episode was all about 1999, and we kind of looked at how the Phantom Menace changed the landscape of cinema and everything that it kind of inspired, like how everyone flocked to the theater to see the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
And now trailers are a big thing. And
I always remember, from as far as 1999, since I guess Eric got to talk movies with you. The one thing I remember about 1999 is that was the year that we met, actually. We can point that out.
Again, cynical and internal enemies.
Yes, that was my first semester. I had gone to Northern Illinois University, and then I transferred to Southern Illinois, and my first semester was the fall of 99, and that's where I met Chad at the TV station where we worked. And I just remember when I left to go to school, when I left to move down to the city of Carbondale, it was the end of August, and the local movie theater, I believe the local movie theater in Carbondale, was like 8 screens, and one of the 8 movies that they were playing was The Sixth Sense.
Okay.
And when I went home for Thanksgiving, I think it was, I drove home to go visit my family for Thanksgiving, The Sixth Sense was still playing in that theater. That I remember about 1999. And then that was the year of, like, I mean, this is my first year in film school, and so it was all about, oh, is this going to be what it's like? I remember going to see Fight Club with a group. I don't even know. You may have been with us.
I think so, yeah.
And we all went and saw it, and then afterwards we all discussed it. We went to a bar afterwards, and we got a couple pitchers of beer, and I was like, is this what it's going to be like? It's film school experience? You're going to go out to the movies? But then I also got the cynical side, which was a lot of the art snobs, and I had a lot of film professors and classmates who were just going all over Magnolia and P.T. Anderson and stuff. And I was like, oh, okay, I went and saw Dogma, you know, and that was, so you had that, you did have both sides of the movies that the cineast could enjoy, and as well as the just popcorn kind of movies.
Yeah, and it is a time when movies would play for more than a month, and you'd have to wait like 6 months for them to be out on DVD.
Or VHS.
Or VHS at that point.
So 1999, I mean, I'm thinking that I would have been mostly listening to, well, still listening to alternative rock. There was a radio station in Carbondale, TAO, right? TAO. WTAO, that was like the really good alt rock station. And so that would have still been, I mean, I would have been listening to Pearl Jam and Tool. And I'm trying to think if like Metallica, the Load and Reloads were like 96, 97. So I think Saint Anger was in a couple, still a couple of years away. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I can't remember exactly what. Because a lot of the band, there was a bunch of bands that I liked that broke up in like 1996, 97. Veruca Salt, Soundgarden, you know. And so it was, I remember 99 being defined by like Korn and Limp Bizkit, you know. And I think Linkin Park, I think, was about to come out around that same time. And I know we talked a little bit about it with Skilo last month. I listened to that episode today, this morning, you know. And we were talking about how the evolution of rap. And it's funny how, like, if this song is sort of, well, as we're going to get into the rest of the songs on the album, there's definitely some hip hop songs on the album. And to me, it sounds a little bit different from Skilo. And Skilo was 95. And I mentioned how like the rap had evolved a little bit. And so, well, I guess we'll go back to 99 and just kind of start by saying, do you remember hearing this song, Chad?
Well, yeah, I was going to say real quick that 98, 99 is probably the resurgence of TRL on MTV.
Okay, sure.
And so you would have had the boy bands, the Britney's, Christina.
For sure.
Limp Bizkit, Kid Rock would have come out at that time.
Okay,
You know, would have gotten popular. And then you have Lynn coming out. And I think you also had LFO and Luscious Jackson.
Ooh,
and
good pull. I love Luscious Jackson, yeah.
Yeah, spoiler, they mentioned it on a clip that I watched this morning.
Oh, okay. LFO, yeah.
LFO. So you had like these summer...
That's a good song.
Summer Salt.
Summer Girls or whatever, yeah.
Is that the one that mentions Chinese...
Oh, God.
Chinese food and New Kids on the Block. Yeah.
Yeah. New Kids on the Block had a bunch of hits. Yeah. Okay.
Do you remember when we met that summer? New Kids on the Block had a bunch of hits. Chinese food makes me sick. And I think it's fly when girls stop by for the summer. For the summer. I like girls that wear Abercrombie and Fitch. I'd take her if I had one wish. She's been gone since that summer.
But then Lynn came out, and this, interesting, I've seen a lot of reports saying this was like the song of the summer, or, you know, calling it. When we get to the charts, this was not a summer song.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. But I vaguely remember the video.
Okay.
Vaguely remember it just from watching it recently and being like, okay, I kind of can pull that from the back recesses of my mind.
Yeah.
But I remember hearing the song probably everywhere, like.
Yeah.
I mean, you knew this song.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, and what their claim to fame, I think, on this song was that it was used in the movie Go, which I saw that in the theater. That was before I was still at Northern, so I think Go came out in the spring of 99.
Okay.
And I remember seeing it in the theater, and there's a bunch of songs. That's a great soundtrack. I own it to this day, and I remember, I think I must have heard it on the soundtrack as well, and I'm pretty sure I saw the video at some point. Maybe it was when I was home during the summer, but maybe if it wasn't even out yet. Or at least hadn't hit big yet. So I remember, you know, I can remember it in passing. It's just one of those songs. And then I feel like by the next summer, it was gone. Like, I never heard it again until I picked up the Go soundtrack a few years back. And then I went and I was like, oh, that's right. Yeah, Steal My Sunshine, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember anything about this band. I couldn't tell you a band member name. I couldn't tell you. Oh. I couldn't pick them out of a lineup.
Yeah.
So getting into discovering this band, I was... That's part of the reason why I chose it was I'm like, okay, who was Lynn? And is it Lenny?
Well, that's funny because I, again, I, there's only for a, even though it's only 20 years old, I think we both mentioned that there was a real lack of articles on the web about them and interview clips on YouTube. I only found like one other podcast that ever that discussed the song. I only made it about 5 minutes into the podcast, and the hosts were just really, really annoying, and they were just dropping F-bombs left and right. And I was like, I can't make it through an hour of this. And at one point, they were just quoting directly from the Wikipedia page. So I'm like, okay, I can do that myself.
The Wikipedia page is two sentences.
And I always, whenever we do these episodes, I always start with the Wikipedia page and then kind of branch off of that, like find the sources that they use and then read the rest of the article or do my own searches alone. And the podcast mentioned it, and then I must have found the article that they read, where the only thing I could find about the name was that, okay, well, the two main members of Lynn are brother and sister, Mark and Sharon Costanzo. And I guess Mark said he had a friend named Leonard.
Okay.
But then when you listen to interviews with Mark, he's, I don't want to say obnoxious, so that's mean. He's just got a personality, and I think he's still stuck in that old B-boy, 90s B-boy thing, which, granted, I'm reading articles that were either from that era,
okay,
or they're articles that were retrospective articles, and he's still trying to kind of have this street cred, which I don't think it makes that big of a deal. He's got to be 40-ish.
Probably over, but I was going to say, I looked at some clips from, like, Much Music had a bunch of stuff, because since Lynn is Canadian,
yes,
Much Music was all over them.
White Boys from Canada Hip Hop, that was the quote that Mark Costanzo called the band.
And, yeah, I couldn't tell if it was an image that he was trying to promote of just like, you know, this obnoxious kind of pre-Jersey Shore, because he's always got the wife beater, and he's just...
You know who he reminds me of, now that I think about it? I just thought of this. He reminds me of Seth Green and his friends from Can't Hardly Wait.
Okay.
They say here 92% of honeys at UCLA sexually active. 92% of women in Los Angeles at UCLA walking around going, class or sex? What shall I do? 92%, yo! You know what that means, don't you?
Huh.
That means I got some 92% chance of embarrassing myself. I roll up on that shorty like, what's up, yo? She be like, you don't know 20 different ways to make me call you Big Papa? Because I don't, yo.
Remember with the stocking caps and the pants kind of pulled down and wife beaters and stuff?
Yeah, and there's one clip where they actually go, they're interviewing them in some store, and I believe it's Drunk Monster or Drunken Monster, whatever the other member of the band.
Okay.
He's trying on like JNKO. Is it JNKO or JNKO? J-N-K-O. The
okay.
jeans that had the big flare bell bottoms that a family of four could live in.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, so it's like very 90s. And so that's the thing. I don't know, again, because there's nothing about them after... basically after their success.
Yeah.
I don't know if this was just an image or if he's just a young kid, you know, a kid at the time, although he probably would have been mid to late
20s. He looked a little older. But then I guess he said he was the younger, Sharon is the older one, I believe, right? But yeah, the article that I read, basically he said that he was like, Leonard's like one of your boys that, you know, you just hang out and you smoke weed with, and that's where I came, it's just Len. It's just a name, it's just a word. And it was like, oh, you really formed your whole group based on that. All righty. And so kind of a standard story we've seen in a lot of these episodes is that Mark was writing songs alone in his basement and recording them by himself. And then, you know, his sister's upstairs and she would come down and he would be like, oh, hey, you want to sing on this track? Like they weren't collaborating and writing together. He would do it all himself and then just be like, hey, you want to come sing? And she had this really soft voice, right? And then he said that he added band members so that he didn't want it to seem like a, quote, basement project. And then when, in fact, it was really just him. And if you think about that, you know, the 90s was a lot of that. I mean, I was talking to someone the other, we were talking about Ministry and Trent Reznor. It's like Nine Inch Nails, he recorded the albums all himself. And then he would go on tour and he would just assemble a bunch of musicians. It is sort of like a basement project. That's all it is. It's just, you know, and it's very similar. What's funny is it's kind of similar to what Skilo was doing, right? He was just writing beats. And I think I mentioned on the episode that, the Skilo episode where we talk about people like Kanye West always talks about how I was working in the, he was working at the Gap and he was just making beats in his own time and then waiting until he was ready to kind of explode. But what's funny with Lynn is that makes sense if you think of them as a hip hop act, but when Lynn first started, they were making alternative albums. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm wondering, like, when he says he's writing, he's doing these songs alone, and then he's having his sister drop in, like, is he actually recording with a guitar? Or I was thinking it was just sort of like a beat, like he's finding loops.
Yeah, Lynn actually had an album prior to Can't Stop the Bum Rush, which were more alternative rock, you know, guitar focused bands. And I tried listening to the first album.
Mm-hmm.
I made it two songs in.
Yeah, I listened to random songs from each of those first two albums. And I remember reading some articles where they were talking about how they sounded like Sonic Youth. And as soon as I heard the albums, I'm like, okay, very fuzzy guitar. And then, you know, whenever Sharon would sing, it was kind of soft. Not that Sonic Youth had a soft female singer, but definitely that sound. Forgettable. Like they were making alt rock albums, but there were so many other alt rock artists in that time period that were doing it a lot better than them. And it's easy to see why they didn't really break out as a rock group. And then before they record the third album was called You Can't Stop the Bum Rush. But before they record that album, Mark Costanzo, because he's living in Toronto at this time, right? Ontario. He goes to Halifax up in Nova Scotia, and he hooks up with a rap trio that are called Hip Club Groove. And they had just broken up after releasing a couple of albums. Two of the members of this trio joined Len. There was a guy named Derek McKenzie, who would be known as D-Rock, and then Brian Higgins, who was DJ Moves. The third member of Hip Club Groove, the one who didn't join Len, his name is Corey Bowles, and he went on to star in Trailer Park Boys, the TV show.
Do you know which character?
I'm not sure. He has since gone on. I mean, he seems to have a pretty good career for himself as an actor, and I think he's still doing music. But the other member that joined Lynn was their new version of the band as a rap act was just named Planet P, P-E-A. But, so yeah, I mean, I think
you know. When I was in high school, my cousin and I would make home movies, did little shorts. We were aspiring rappers.
Oh, right.
And his name's Jason. So he was Easy J and I was Hard C. These names sound like on that level of creativity.
Oh, yes. D-Rock, DJ Moves, and Planet P. And I'm guessing Planet P's real name probably starts with a P, Peter or something.
Yeah, you know? And then Mark became the burger pimp.
Yes, yes. I did not put that in my notes. I was hoping you would have written that down. So, okay, but like you said, so then, I mean, the funny thing was I could not find, as far as the specifics of the song itself, like, you know, what, did they go into the studio? Or, you know, it wasn't like one of those ones where it was, we had the whole album recorded and then we needed one more song. Like, this was just sort of a mishmash of songs. They just kind of slapped them all together. And, I mean, even they admitted that he didn't know that was going to be the hit. They kind of put it together. As far as the song itself, it's built off of a sample of a 1976 hit, More, 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 by the Andrea True Connection. Thing is, I know that song. The first time I ever heard that song was in a promo for Sex in the City. One of the seasons of Sex in the City, they had a promo, and I was like, well, this is kind of catchy. It's like this fun little disco song. You know, Andrea, and of course, Andrea True was like a porn star, and this writer, his name is Greg Diamond, and he was a musician who had recorded this song. He found, I don't know if he found Andrea True, but he was going to make her he created this band called the Andrea Chu Connection around her, and he would play music and write a lot of the songs. He actually gets a writing credit on Steal My Sunshine, even though he passed away a few months before the song was actually released. What I thought was interesting was that Greg Diamond was his name. He went on to work with Luther Vandross, kind of when Luther Vandross was still sort of unknown, because Luther Vandross had played on David Bowie's Young Americans album with Greg Diamond's brother, Godfrey Diamond. So I can work in 6 degrees of Len with David Bowie is in there. As you said, you know, the song, I mean, I don't really have a whole lot on the song itself. Like, as far as, I mean, it is what it is. You know, if you talk about, I grew up listening to hip hop, and the lyrics are a little goofy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think what makes the song so catchy is that it's got a great beat. It's got a good beat. And when you go back and listen to More, 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 and you hear the sample that he pulls for that song, it's like, okay, that's a really good clip to use. And then, of course, it has that sort of light, fluffy chorus, which not the part that the male is singing, but the part that Sharon is saying, "Steal my sunshine." Like, I think everybody can kind of sing along to that.
From my researches, I didn't find anything about the writing of the album at all.
Yeah.
The only story that really came out was the story of the video.
Oh, yes.
Which they told the record company they needed X amount of money, which was
$150,000, I think. Yeah.
And they were going to direct the video themselves. And some reason the record label okayed this, and they went down to Florida and took their friends and didn't have any permits and just decided, they said they would shoot between... At 1 o'clock.
They shoot between the hours of 1 and 5, yeah.
Because they would get drunk after 5 and be too hungover before 1
yes.
to be able to shoot. And then they saw some scooters, so like, oh, let's jump on these scooters and ride. Let's do this.
Did you read, I read something that they couldn't get motorcycles.
Yeah.
It was old enough for permits or something, and so they had to get scooters. Yeah, it was in Daytona during spring break. And so, again, maybe for a late 90s music video, it was like, oh, it's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. You watch it and you're like, oh, there's kind of nothing there, but... It's hip hop. It's a goofy. I mean, hip hop. There's been a lot of hip hop videos that are similar to that, right? Where it's just the band kind of mugging for the camera. Yeah.
Well, let's just dive right into the charts.
Yes, because please.
I think we're running out of topics to talk about the song. So I said earlier this was not a summer song. It cracked the top 100, August 14th, the week of August 14th, 1999.
Okay.
It didn't crack the top 40 for another 3 weeks until September 11th, 1999.
Okay.
Here's the rest of the number 30, since it debuted at 31.
September of 1999.
Yeah, September 11th, 1999. It's at 31, so here's the other 9 songs in the 40. We'll test this is where your musical expertise comes.
Ooh, got it. Okay.
Number 40 is It's Not Right, But It's Okay.
That's Whitney Houston, right?
It is, yes. Whitney Houston. 39 is You Had Me From Hello.
Oh, no.
It's Kenny Chesney.
Oh, well, look at that. Country singer. Country singers are breaking in.
38, Lessin' and Leavin'.
It's
Jody Messina.
Okay, another country. Okay. Yeah.
37, Single White Female. Shelley Wright.
Oh, no.
36, Better Days, and The Bottom Drops Out.
That, they might be a one. That's, I know, everyone knows that song. I forget what they're called, though.
They're called Citizen King.
Citizen King, yeah. They could be eligible
for. Not to be confused with Citizen Dick.
Okay, sure.
Is that the band from Singles?
Yes, it was in there, yes.
Very good. 35 is Fortunate.
Fortunate.
By Maxwell.
Oh, okay, yeah. Late 90s R&B, I'm not up on that.
Yeah, number 34 is Back That Thing Up.
By, Mr. Cal? Starts with the Juvenile.
Juvenile featuring.
Okay, there's a featuring, of course.
Manny Fresh and Lil Wayne.
Oh, Lil Wayne, when he was really Lil.
Yeah.
Okay.
33 is Amazed.
Oh, that's a country song.
Lone Star.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
And
31 is.
32 is I will remember you live. Live is in Prince.
Okay. No. No.
Sarah McLachlan.
Oh, jeez. Okay. So I'm saving some dogs. That's all I think of.
So So in these 10 songs. You have 4 country acts crossing over. So, this would have been,
I think Shania Twain would came out.
Is it more like because 1990? I wonder if like by the late 90s, a lot of the rock artists were going toward the album format and not doing singles, and whereas the country artists were kind of that's when country started to get kind of revived, where it was like where they were all a lot of it was image based. Mm-hmm. Like the country music I remember from the 80s, those artists were not trying to look good and be on television. Like it was just they were just making music. I think by the end of the 90s, I could see that.
They said you had Kenny Chesney, Shania Twain would have been popular like the couple years prior to this. So, yeah, you're getting into more image-based. And then Lone Star's Amazed is just the wedding song of the year. So.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm sure I've heard that at a wedding at some point.
So, anyway, Lynn's at 31. The following week, they're up to 28 and then 21. October 9th, they're up to 18. Finally, November 13th, they peak at number 9.
They made it to the top 10. Okay. They made
it top 10. 2 weeks, they were at number 10, I think, for a week, then 9. But here is the rest of the top 10 for the week of November 13th, 1999.
Okay.
I know you're going to know this one. It's You Drive Me Crazy. Britney Spears.
From the movie Drive Me Crazy. 1999. Speaking of 1999 cinema, I do love Drive Me. I love me some Melissa Joan Hart, so yeah.
Number 8 is My Love Is Your Love.
Oh, I should know this, but no.
That's Whitney Houston again.
Okay, yeah. By then, I mean, those are kind of the tail end of her last few hits that she had, right? Yeah.
Number 7 is I Need to Know. Ex Mr. J-Lo.
Mark Anthony,
Mark
right?
Mark Anthony? Or is he current J-Lo? No.
No, current J-Lo is Alex Rodriguez, the baseball player.
Okay. Number 6 is Back at One.
Back at One?
Back at One.
No.
By Brian McKnight.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah.
Number 5 is Unpretty.
TLC, right?
No.
Okay.
You're going to know this one. Number 4 is Heartbreaker.
It's Mariah Carey, right? Featuring Jay-Z?
Yes.
I think, yeah.
Number 3, another song that I almost picked for this year, for this episode, Mambo Number 5.
By Lou Bega. Yeah. Okay, he's not a gimmick like the other ones, but I feel like that song is just sort of a time and a place, and I'm glad we shouldn't really talk about that one.
Actually, I listened to that album.
Right?
Well, I'll just say it would have.
It's an album.
It's a better listen than Can't Stop the Bum Rush.
Okay.
Number 2 is Satisfy You.
Satisfy You. I'm sure. I know. I'm
Puff speaking. Daddy.
Oh, okay.
Featuring
Faith Evans.
R. Kelly.
Okay.
Yeah. And the number 1 song, and I believe the song of the year for 1999. Smooth.
Oh my, that you just could not escape Santana and Rob Thomas featuring Rob Thomas.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I feel like Matchbox 20 was big enough and then that just blew up.
Yes.
You know, I'm sure there were a lot of people out there that thought it was a Matchbox 20 song. Who's this old guy playing guitar? And you're like, are you kidding?
Looks like one of the members of the Muppets Electric, or Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem.
But
so that's Lynn's chart history. From there, nothing. And as you said, the album itself, I'm probably going to be a little contradictory here. I don't think the album is bad, but I don't think the album is good. I think it's a perfectly fine album to put on as background music.
Yeah. There seems like there's no flow to it. Yeah. Like, and I'm a big fan of albums, like albums as a whole. And there's no, usually when you hear certain like a good album, it kind of has a beginning and a middle and an end, like it really has an overarching feel to it, and this kind of feels like a demo, like it just kind of is just thrown together. And I mean, they're smart for they put Steal My Sunshine as the first song, and I think the album probably performed well because this is still back when people were buying albums for one song. I mean, I guess the singles and CD singles, that wasn't, you know, they're not quite digital downloads yet, and so what was weird is like every song on the album does not sound like the one before it. Like they're just trying to throw as many things as they can, and it almost just feels like a bunch of people just screwing around in a studio throwing things together.
Yeah, my thought on listening to it was, and this is I don't mean to be insulting, but I'm probably going to be. This is what I imagine every CD that people on Hollywood Boulevard try to get me to buy that they self-produce.
Yeah,
I feel like that's what this sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. What's weird is it made me long for the days of Skilo. Like I was like, man, I mean, because that album I didn't really enjoy listening to, but then it made it, by comparison, it's to this.
Does it make you long for Mungo Jerry.
No, that's nothing that would make me long for Mungo Jerry. But, and we even said, like, Steal My Sunshine just basically blew up, but the band never had a second single. And Mark Costanzo, he jokingly said, you know, he was surprised that there was even a first single, you know. And then there was one other song on the album that I really enjoyed, and it was the second song on the album, and it's called Cryptic Souls Crew. And this is where it almost feels like Len is a collective, because like Mark and Sharon are not even on that song. It's a hip hop song by all the other people that like were Len was friends with or something. And the whole song is nothing but like there's a different rapper gets a different verse. And in that verse, he introduces himself and says his whole name. And he gets, I don't even think he gets a whole verse. He only gets like a few lines. And it's got a great beat. I think that's credit to Mark. Mark Costanzo gets the production, you know, credit on that. But I listened to it again, actually, before I walked over here. To the beat, y'all, rock, rock, to the beat, y'all.
It's the OBE, the O, the NE, yes, the man that you think of. And when I step inside the place to be, all them ladies fall in love.
And I'm the VAN, DA, the L, and I would like to mention that T-Dot City is a place we dwell. We came to party with no tension. What is the ABD go MIN? That's abdominal, quite obvious, cause I trust you know how to spell.
Who's that cryptic souls cat that's known to get live? You transform my name to numbers, it'd be 135, 911, 19, stepping on your scene. A6 knows the basics.
And I was kind of like, oh, all right. Like, because my first thought when I first heard it, I'm like, oh, maybe this might be a song that I'll download and save. And the more I heard it, I'm like, oh, it's just sort of, it's just kind of there. You know, it's it's because of the fact that it's like, I never heard a song like that that has 17 different people introducing themselves over the song. You know, I could see, you know, having three people, and then that way you introduce themselves, and then the rest of the song they're just rapping, you know. And there are two different versions of the song actually. The album version is just the various members of the Cryptic Souls crew, and the D-Rock and Planet P, they actually do the last two verses on the song, and in the chorus they say, you know, they say we're the Cryptic Souls crew. Whereas there's another version, which is called the Len Crew Mix, which is they did a music video for that. And that is just exclusively, it has some of the Cryptic Souls crew member doing like a freestyle at the beginning of the video, over, you know, with no music. And then for the song itself, it's just Planet P and D-Rock rapping. And those verses are not, they're just kind of, those are not that great. And in the chorus, they say, we are the Len crew. I watched a live, they do a live clip. I say live loosely. They're clearly lip syncing for some Canadian talk show. And Mark and Sharon are out there kind of like singing the chorus, even though who knows if they even recorded it. What's funny was if you watch the video is basically the Steal My Sunshine video, but instead of being in Daytona, they're at a ski resort. It's just them goofing off. And you're like, that's the theme. Now I can see why maybe this band never really took off, is because I don't think they really ever took themselves seriously, right?
That song reminded me, when I first started, reminded me a lot of Sugar Hill Gang.
Yeah.
And I think I like the song because, it, as we discussed on the Skilo episode, that's the style of hip-hop that I enjoy. It's just kind of, it's got a good beat, but it's just fun, you know, goofy lyrics.
Sure.
But at the same time, when you look at 1999, when you had Eminem coming up, you had Jay-Z was out.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Biggie and Tupac would have been dead at this time.
But still releasing albums, still, it seemed like, yeah.
You know, that sound is still there.
Yeah.
There was nothing in these raps that was going to set them apart as someone to listen to.
Yeah, and I mentioned when you talk about the late 90s rap, the very next year, in the year 2000, there's this band that comes onto the scene, and I believe they're from Los Angeles, and they're a part of the Good Life that they recorded with Skilo, and they're called Jurassic 5. And I have their first album was called Quality Control, and that's a really, really good album. And when I first heard Cryptic Souls Crew, yeah, a little bit of the the Sugar Hill Gang, but I heard Jurassic 5. And so I've actually been listening to the Jurassic 5 album today.
Now I'm going to say this one time, boy, and that's my word. We rock the shot to knock fire through the Hindenburg.
The contribution is clear.
You add water to bone and get the Jurassic 5 on the microphone.
Now if you like the tone
and how the harmony's done
and the sucker MC's die before they begun, well, I'd like to know if...
And that's something, if you haven't heard it, Chet, I think you might like it.
I think I've listened to it in the past, but I couldn't tell you anything about it.
Because it's not violent. There's not a lot of cursing and whatnot. It's just really good beats, and it's this group of five dudes, and they kind of just trading verses back and forth. Mm. It's like a PG-13 mm. Wu-Tang Clan, you know, in a weird sort of way. I'm not sure they should put that on their album as the blurb. Yeah. But yeah, so as far as, and then the rest of the album, I mean, you know, there's a song with CeCe DeVille, Feeling All Right, the next single that they tried to drop.
It's early in the morning and I'm feeling kind of dumb. I'm trying real hard, but I'm having no fun. I'm looking all around and everything looks the same. It's like being the smartest kid in class and having no brain. Sharon's right beside me. Lost their fat man flow. It's just a matter of time before our brains all blow. My brains all broken, but I'm feeling alright. I feel like I'm choking, but I'm feeling alright. I'm going down fast, but I'm feeling alright.
If you're gonna drop that first single and blow up like that, in order to sort of have any prolonged, you cannot change your style. Like, you cannot be like, oh, actually, we also do alt rock. We're going to drop this second single. Hey, America, listen to this. No.
You know who else kind of suffered from that? Extreme.
You're just trying to work this in?
You know, it just came to me because More Than Words was the acoustic ballad. And then the follow-up actually was Wholehearted, which was also another acoustic kind of song. But the rest of their albums sound nothing like those two songs, and I think there's my extreme plug for this episode. Yeah. Now go back and listen to Pornograffiti.
Okay.
Anyway.
So, anything else about the rest of the album?
Well, I was just going to say, normally we would do a track-by-track breakdown. We're gonna spare you. Yeah, so I was just going to ask you, is there any other song on the album that stood out to you, or that
the only songs that I really enjoyed were those first two. And, like... You'd think, oh, this is going to be go off to a good start, like, but then it kind of goes. They start dropping in these sort of alt rock songs or just sort of weird electronic, droning kind of music. And
actually, one song. Let me pull up the chart. It's called the Hard Disk Approach. But it sound.
Is it the one in German? They're singing in German. Yeah.
Where I mean, listening to it at work, it just seemed like a droning background. Like, it didn't sound like a song, and it's like right in the middle of the album.
Well, it's like we were saying, it's like if it was true that Mark was just making these beats, like, that's what it sounds like. It sounds like it's a producer who's created these beats, and some of them, like, the lyrics don't even mean, like, they're repetitive or whatnot. There's no, like, are you trying to be a rapper or are you trying to be a rock artist? It's just instrumental. Like you said, you can put it on in the background. That I guess you can, but I'd rather there's other things I could have listened to in the background. But
yeah, so that's the album.
Yeah.
Now,
as far as the legacy of the song itself, I always look up the compilations. From what I could see, it appears on 20 different compilation albums, which is not bad for a song from the late 90s. Like I mentioned, other than the Now, That's What I Call Music, the compilation albums kind of went away. The 80s artists seem to be on a lot of albums. It's on the soundtrack to Go. What I thought was really funny is the song actually appears in the 2018 film Peter Rabbit, which is the digitally animated. I think James Corden is the voice of Peter Rabbit. And it's a party scene with all these animals in a garden. Like, Peter Rabbit shows up, brings the animals with him, and then they just start going through the garden and eating all the food there. Except the lyrics have been updated.
Wow. All right, this is our land now, so let's not go crazy straight away. It's our job to nurture it, to sustain it, prepare for the future. With privilege comes responsibility. I'm sorry, I almost got through that with a straight face. Knock yourself out.
I was lying on the grass of Sunday morning of last week, indulging in my self-defeat. I know it's up for me.
If you steal my sunshine,
making sure I'm not in too deep.
If you steal my sunshine,
keep bursting on my feet.
If you steal my sunshine,
wait for me! I wasn't designed for running!
It's all bow down to Peter. Made the garden one big bird feeder. Now our life is so much sweeter.
So I was listening to it, I'm like, oh, okay, they're using the song, kind of like when Kung Fu Fighting was in Daddy Daycare or whatever. But then all of a sudden I'm like, wait, did they just change the lyrics and kind of get somebody who sounds like Mark, or who knows, maybe Mark did it. Yeah. I think it's another one of those ones like Skila, where the song keeps generating royalties for the band, and they were on it. They were signed to a deal with, it was called the Work Group, which was under Sony label. And shortly after the album came out, the Work Group folded. And so Sony didn't know what to do with it, and I think Sony didn't honor it at that point. So then they went to DreamWorks Records. They got a $750,000 advance to go to the DreamWorks Records. Mark told the people from DreamWorks that he had a whole bunch of other hits, even though he didn't. And the label wanted another Steal My Sunshine, and Mark knew that he couldn't necessarily replicate that success. So they started recording the album, they got the advance, and they basically just partied and just blew all the money away. And then just as they were finally set to deliver the album, the label folded again. And so the songs never actually turned up until 2005. So, you know, by the time, at least 5-6 years later, and the album was called The Diary of the Mad Men. And I listened to that one. It was okay. It's got a fun cover of New Edition's Cool It Now.
Everybody sings.
By that point, I mean, I wonder if that would have come out in 2000, would they have still had a chance? But by being stuck in record label limbo, yeah, and at five, yeah, years later, like, who's listening to that by 2005?
Yeah, I don't think so, because I would say probably I liked the follow-up album better than,
okay, the, sure, Bummer, but I believe that.
Cool It Now, top five song all time, but their version is missing what makes Cool It Now awesome.
The rap in the middle.
Yeah.
Listen to me, let me tell you why you all coming down on me, trying to tell me how my life is supposed to be. I know you're only trying to help me out, trying to show me what life is really about. But this time I'm gonna make it on my own. So why don't you fellas just leave me alone? Ronnie, Bobby, Ricky, and Mike. If I love the girl, who cares who you like?
One thing we failed to mention, I guess this will be the time to bring it up, is after Steal My Sunshine hit, they went out on tour.
Oh, yes.
They booked 200 dates, did 80 shows, and then called it quits.
Just quit.
And now, so my question, I guess, regarding Lynn is, you know, we've said Mark never wanted to have a hit. He didn't expect it to be a hit. Didn't really have a follow-up. Quit after 80 shows. How did they ever get signed to a label? Or why did they sign? Because they don't seem like a type of band that would want the success or want the...
I think that kind of just exposes one of the biggest problems with the record industry, especially back then, is that everyone's trying to find that unsigned artist that's going to blow up. I mean, it's the same thing happened with Skila, right? And then, you know, it's so easy to just drop them from the record, from the label after that. If it's like, oh, you're not going to generate enough income for us, we'll just find another. And I think it's the idea is just kind of getting in on the ground floor with some of these artists. And so you're just taking chances. And it's A&R people. Like, I mean, I don't know if they'd done the first two albums and then they signed with Sony. I mean, did they just know somebody and they had a owe you a favor. Oh, well, I'll go ahead and give you put you in touch with my people over at the work group and Sony. Or maybe the work group was just trying to make a name for themselves, and they said, oh, this could be the artist to kind of jump on. But yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, just question too, because it would seem like if you don't want to be successful and you don't want to do this, then other than like possibly being young and just being like, oh, they're going to give us all this money and we can go party.
Absolutely.
We can do it. Then I can understand. But yeah, I don't understand why they would have signed to be something that they never wanted to be.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you could say that that's what kind of what, isn't that what the Beastie Boys kind of presented themselves at, just partying all the time. But then I think they kind of realized, hey, wait a minute, we got something good here. We should work on it. And maybe I don't know if Mark and Sharon, I've heard conflicting stories about maybe they weren't talking for long periods of time, and you know, but I think also too that, like you said, it was that collective, right? So they didn't. I'm sure that maybe D-Rock and Planet P had other, you know, interests. Maybe they can try to launch their own solo careers. Yeah, it seems kind of bizarre. I did see that in the following year, in the year 2000, Len recorded a cover of Kim Wilde's Kids in America, which was used on the soundtrack to the Digimon, the movie. And then in 2002, again, remember, I think by this time they've still recorded the follow-up, but it's not, it's just sitting on a shelf somewhere. In 2002, they had a song called Do What You Wanna Do, which is on the soundtrack to The Hot Chick, the Rob Schneider movie. That song's not bad. I recommend maybe checking it out. You know, just a fun one. Also on the soundtrack of 2002's The Hot Chick, a song called Take Tomorrow, One Day at a Time by Butch Walker. Yeah, so that was my Butch Walker connection. But yeah, and then we saw, I think it was, did they finally had yet another album, and it was 2012, I think it was.
At least that's the one that has This Town or The Town
something. Yeah, My Neighborhood or something. Singing about Toronto.
Did you watch that video?
Yes.
Which is basically Steal My Sunshine and the one where they were skiing that you mentioned earlier.
Oh, Cryptic Soul Screen, yes.
But it's just different shots around Toronto and a lot of stock images of Toronto.
Yeah, and I wonder, when I see artists do that, we saw that with Skilo in the last episode. He did a song called I Love LA, and I remember, I listened to the episode this morning, and I love that you use that as the outro track, because that's a really good song. And I wonder if, like, Skilo recorded that song hoping that maybe one of the local sports teams would pick up on it, and I'm wondering if Mark and Len, if they tried to figure out that maybe the Raptors or the Maple Leafs will kind of, you know, sound, because, I don't know, I hope we're not doing a disservice to our listeners where we're not going too thorough into their career. Because number one, it just wasn't terribly interesting. Mm-hmm. And because of the fact that they didn't really take themselves seriously, so it was hard for us to. But, I mean, their albums were so sporadic, and they'd really just never really had a music career. Like, I don't even think they're still... Mark has said that he works in EMI publishing, but he won't reveal exactly what he does. I'm sure he has some sort of A&R... kind of gig. What does Sharon do? Whatever happened to Planet P and D-Rock? Are they in the industry at all? I wonder. There's no talent, right?
I don't know, but these are going to be questions that will keep me up until we get an answer. So we'll have to throw it out on the Twitter machine to see if Planet P and D-Rock are out there somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, even Len's Twitter, which they have one.
Yeah.
But I think it's got one tweet from each of the last 2 years.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, and we talked last week about with Skilo and whatnot and these package tours. Like, I'm sure there'd be a chance where they could be asked to turn up on one of these 90s retrospective tours. But then, like, who do you, is it just going to be Mark and a drum machine? Like, you know, is it worth it to bring Planet P and D-Rock? Or you just have Mark and Sharon come? It's just like, do your one song, get your 10 minutes, and maybe they drop in one of the other songs, the My Neighborhood song, or, you know, and then they just, okay, now here comes Tone Loke. And I'm surprised that they're not trying to get in on that. Yeah. Maybe it's because they're not really a band, right?
Band, and they don't want to go out on tour or do something? Or
this is true. They'd agree to go on the tour and then skip out halfway through.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much all we have on Len.
Yeah, the last thing I have is just a quote from Mark Costanzo from 2012. And he said, Len isn't meant to change the effing worlds. That's a problem. The juvenile, they just throw in the curse words. He said, quote, it's not supposed to be anything more than people getting together and forgetting about trying to be cool and to help us to have fun, make music, and express certain things. So sure, it's sugar, it's bubblegum, but that's why I love making it. Empty calories,
yeah,
right? That's kind of what it is. It's just a fun fun beat. I mean, like I said, it's a great summer song. I will still continue to listen to it. I've got it on playlists on my iTunes. I whenever it pops up, oh, okay. It's funny to think about, like, when I actually listen to it a few more times, you start dissecting the lyrics, and you're like, the lyrics are gibberish. Mm-hmm. They are just straight gibberish. It's the kind of thing that you could do it in karaoke. There's clips on YouTube of Mark doing, like, showing up at karaoke places and singing it. And yeah, I think it's just people just like that beat. And I think it goes more to Greg Diamond and the Andrea True connection. That's their beat. Like, if you're gonna build a song on a sample, but everyone knows, people like the beat because of the sample, not necessarily because of the beat that comes after it. You know, there's nothing else. They like that, and they like the hook. I don't think people are singing along to it. I cannot imagine people are singing along to this song in their cars. Building a heap of I got a heap of straws, and I had to, you know, you're just waiting for the
steal my sunshine.
Yeah. That's and sing along to that part. Basically.
Yeah, that's probably the only lyric that if you went up and asked people to quote a lyric from the song, that's probably all you're going to get. So,
absolutely.
Well, that was Lynn. It's July. It's the dog days of summer. It's the dog days of one-hit wonders. I'm trying to think if there was ever a dog that had a one-hit wonder or someone with a dog name. Three Dog Night. They had more than one hit, but see, I'm getting delirious now from the heat, so we're going to take a little commercial break.
Hey everyone, Kevin Huntsberger here from My 123 Cents, the podcast, and my123cents.com. Every Monday, a new episode drops with the latest news and happenings in the world of professional wrestling. Head to the archives and listen to interviews with legends of the ring like Double J, Jeff Jarrett, Mick Foley, Kamala, and Dan the Beast Severin. Current superstars like Sheamus, Xavier Woods, and Kofi Kingston have been part of the discussion too. Again, it's My 123 Cents, the podcast, a wrestling fan's perspective. Thanks for listening.
Yes, remember to check out all the shows here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. And also head over to jitterymonkey.com, hit that shop button, buy a t-shirt. Support us. Mike, we should really do a Wonder Why t-shirt and maybe put like Mungo Jerry and Lynn on the shirt.
Why though?
Well, it would make people wonder.
I guess they would be curious and fascinated.
And interesting. Which is a t-shirt that you can buy over at the Jittery Monkey shop. Mike, earlier today, before we started recording, we were having a discussion about package tours, and you had mentioned the 90s package tours in our discussion on Lent. So I threw out a question to you because there is as we record this in a few days, there is an 80s weekend tour that's going to be playing here in Los Angeles. There are three rappers on the show, Vanilla Ice, Tone Loc, and Young MC. Most of the time when you see older, these package shows or older artists, you see the same people on every show.
Sure.
And
I'm guessing, I'm always wondering, they probably all know each other, right? By this point,
they got to.
They might not even know each other back then unless they were at an MTV awards show together, but now they probably all know each other, right?
And I believe MC Hammer has like Hammer's House tour
something this year. Something like that.
But so I had posed a question to you that what, especially since you are more of the hip hop connoisseur of the two of us, what rap bands from the either 80s or early 90s that are still around would you like to see on tour?
You know, and it's funny because one of them was an artist that you just saw, and it was Naughty by Nature. And I liked them. Their first two albums are really good. And I think, because I feel like these package tours are only going to get maybe a half an hour, probably even less, depending on who else is headlining, if they're bringing in, you know, the big, if like a rock band to tour with them. If it was just gonna be an all rap package tour, I think they would be good. The first one that came to mind, I think I mentioned it to you today, was a group called Third Base. And because I don't think, you know, they're not one of the ones who does these tours, because it's the two rappers, MC Search and Pete Nice. And MC Search, he has got his hands in so many other things. I believe he still is a DJ in New York City. He's done a couple of VH1 reality shows, producing and hosting. And then Pete Nice, I think, had some legal troubles. He owned a baseball card shop, and he had got into some issues with like fraudulent memorabilia and whatnot. But I liked enough of their music. I also was a really big fan of, I liked this band called Diggable Planets, and they only had like two albums. That, you know, their big hit, you probably know, is the Cool Like That. You know, if you heard it, you probably would recognize it. And I feel like you, if I can see them on a package tour, they get their little 10 minutes and then they just, you know, maybe they do one other song and they just do cool like that. And then, all right, here's Young MC, you know, so that would be another one. But I actually saw Digable Planets. I saw them at a tiny little bar downtown Los Angeles where they did a whole set by themselves and it was really good. So I think, yeah, Naughty by Nature, Third Base. I'm sure I could think of more, but a lot of the ones are kind of like when you think of the 80s bands, like you could say, oh, I want an 80s package tour and I want it to be Tesla and Motley Crue and stuff. And you're like, no, they're probably headlining on their own or they're opening for one huge band and touring together. No. The package tours are usually artists that had three hits, right? And a couple of albums as compared to having like seven or eight albums worth of materials. Who's playing on the 80s one right now? Howard Jones, I think. The guy from Erasure.
Yeah, this one is the Erasure, Andy Bell.
Andy Bell, right, yeah.
The Fix.
The Fix, who I do like The Fix.
The Alarm.
Yeah. They only had a couple of like hits.
The Motels.
And The Motels, same thing, just the two, Suddenly Last Summer and Only the Lonely, right? And
yeah.
So, I mean, we saw The Motels open with Berlin opening for the Bengals. Like, I could see being an opener on a short tour versus like being on a package. Yeah. Maybe you get more songs because you're sort of one of the opening acts versus, all right. And it's funny to think that you're going to have Vanilla Ice and Tone Loc and Young MC playing all these rock bands. And now that you mentioned it, I think one of the main reasons they could do that is I wonder if it helps with the stage setup. Because when a rock band gets done, they got to tear down a lot of stuff. And then you could just, hey, let's bring this rapper out. All he's going to have is a turntable, two turntables and a microphone, if you will. And then Vanilla Ice can come out and do four songs. In the meantime, you got the roadies setting up the next rock band. And then as soon as he's done, boom, the stage is set. That's got to be it, right? I can't imagine they're going to knock all three rap acts out in a row. That seems, you know, cause it seems antithetical because I think there's a chance maybe some people are showing up just for the rap acts. If you show all three of them, then they're going to take off, yeah. Right?
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting. I haven't decided if I'm going to go to the show or not, but if I do, we'll give you a recap on next month's Wonder Why. Speaking of next month's Wonder Why, wow, we're getting really good at segues and transitions here.
That's a good segue.
Mike, what have you chosen for next month's one-hit wonder?
Okay, I decided we're going to do something different. I wanted to have a little fun with this because I found an artist that is a very famous one-hit wonder. And it's a song that we all know and love. It's quite old. I remember hearing it growing up. I know nothing else about the artist and the song. They were a one-hit wonder. They broke up, and their lead singer embarked on a solo career, and he was a one-hit wonder. So it's sort of a twofer. I thought it'd be a fun twofer, and there is it's a tie-in to some recent events. So to start, the artist is Kaja Gugu. 1983, they were a one-hit wonder with what song?
Too Shy.
Hush, Hush, I Do I. Yes. I think we all know that band because of the name. And I remember that song being somewhat catchy. I don't think I've heard that song all the way in its entirety in 20 years. So I'm looking forward to going in and digging out that whole album. After they broke up, the lead singer, Lamal, had a huge hit the next year, 1984, with
the theme song to The Neverending Story.
And that he also was a one-hit wonder. And I don't even know if I could place that song. Those of you who were listening know that it was recently used as a pivotal, during a pivotal scene in the final episode of Stranger Things from this past season.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, when they started singing it, I was like, okay, I'm sure if I heard it, because I hate to admit it, and I've got a month to rectify it, I have never seen The Neverending Story.
I saw it the last time I saw it was about, I would say close to 15 years ago.
Okay.
And I didn't think it held up from my childhood. But I used to have the soundtrack to The Neverending Story.
Really? Yes. Okay.
But I believe it was stolen from me. So
we got a few things we can kind of discuss. And I'll watch the movie at some point in the next month. But yes, so Kaja Gugu, Too Shy, and Lamal's The Neverending Story, which one-hit wonders back-to-back years. And so I feel like Lamal, talk about package tours, he's one of these guys that turns up on a lot of the British versions of the package tours, or like you see him at Glastonbury or these random British festivals where they have like huge worldwide acts, and then they have some of the local British acts come on there. So again, two artists that I don't even know the songs very well, but I've heard of them, and I think it might be fun to dig into.
You have given me an inspiration for the following month, possibly. We'll see. But that's going to do it for this episode. I'm looking forward. I think this is going to be good. I'm curious to hear some Kajagoogoo. Et tu sais, Kajagoogoo a lot next month.
We will be saying it quite often.
Yes. Once again, he's Mike DeKalb. You can find him on Twitter at Mike DeKalb. You can also go to HockeyTransplant.com, which is his website detailing hockey adventures. I am Chad Smart. You can find me on Twitter at Chad Smart, or you can go to PositiveCynicism.com and see blogs that were written a year ago and has not been updated since then. So you can keep checking back and maybe I will update. And also, we have the Positive Cynicism Facebook page. Mike, do you have a Hockey Transplant Facebook page?
Yes, I do.
You do? I did. Maybe I don't like it.
Oh, no.
But you can check out Hockey Transplant on Facebook and, of course, all the shows here on Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network, jitterymonkey.com. Rate, review, tell us you like the show, tell us you hate the show. Just tell us something about the show. Tell us you listened to the show. That's all we're asking. But as always, question everything, do something positive, and represent your neighborhood.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.